RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
All right, it's time for our Money Talks for a Thursday morning. Simon Angelo is joining me. Simon is the Chief Executive Officer and Publisher at Wealth Morning, www.wealthmorning.com. He's been investing in the market since he was 17. He recently spent a couple of years working in the hedge fund industry in Europe. Before that, he owned an award-winning professional services business and online learning company in Auckland for 20 years. He's completed the Certificate in Discretionary Investment Management from the Personal Finance Society of the UK, has written a best-selling book and manages global share portfolios. Simon Angelo, welcome back to Money Talks.
Hi, Paul. Hello to your listeners. Great to be here. Lots to talk about in the world of money and finance.
As a fully subscribed member of the world of money and finance, Simon, with that hat on, watching either the clips or the full thing or both of the debate, you know, the one I mean, what were you thinking?
So we're talking the Trump versus Biden debate on CNN. I sit at a trading desk four nights a week for our wholesale clients, so I'm looking to see what moves markets. Well, my reaction to that debate was, who's actually running the country?
Yeah.
There were definitely signs of cognitive decline, and it was sad to watch. I think Trump did a good job. I think he's learnt, and he appeared quite presidential against Mr. Biden. I think as New Zealanders, we expect our politicians to be without flaws, and I actually take another view. I think a person who's flawed, who's made a few mistakes, has had a chance to learn things.
Yeah. But if he had piled in on the opportunities, I think he at one point, you know, mentioned that I don't think he knows what he's thinking. I remember him saying that. But if you'd piled in, because you're right, it was sad, it would have looked too predatory.
Yeah, I think that would have been off-putting, and it really spoke for itself. I mean, what was said, I couldn't almost believe what I was hearing at one point. They were talking about crime and illegal immigrants, and I think Trump mentioned about a rape that had taken place, and Biden talked about people getting raped by their in-laws. And I mean, I know you have some awkward dinner time conversations with your in-laws, but I was struggling to process what I was listening to.
Yeah, where did that come from, I wonder?
Yeah, it was concerning to watch. But I think the real concern for financial markets is who's actually running the country here. And when I think about that carefully, well, I think it's the lobby groups and the woke industrial complex. I mean, these are the large corporations, and we invest in many of these large corporations in their shares. And we actually just want them to deliver value to their customers and focus on the bottom line. And instead, many of them are focused on ESG, DEI, CSR, corporate social responsibility.
Oh, God, there are too many now.
Yeah, well, all these three-letter tools, well, they're really tools of political power. And as shareholders, we really just want companies to concentrate on delivering value in the bottom line. And, I mean, if you look at some studies, companies that are deep into ESG, they actually give up 3% or so return compared to companies that are focused on their core business.
And they're happy to do that.
Well, they derive power from it. So if you're an ESG and a DEI business and the government wants to know where to go to get help with the climate or diversity, you can put your hand up and become a power center and a revenue center. And that may well be good if you're a corporate board member looking for political and economic power. It's not so much good for shareholders who are actually just looking for growth and income.
Yeah.
I mean, I say if you want to do that, it may well be good and virtuous, but do it on your own dime and your own time.
Yeah. Speaking to your point about who's running the whole thing, I've found out just in the last week or so from Mike Benz, actually, one of his posts, these Donilon brothers. Have you heard of them, Mike Donilon. He's one of the big guys at BlackRock. According to Mike Benz, controls $10 trillion, ultimately. That's right. Probably who's running things, if you want to look. And the brother is senior advisor to the president in the White House. Two brothers.
Yes. Well, I mean, BlackRock is a huge investor and has the power to move markets. They have a Bitcoin fund out now, iBit as well. So they have their fingers in many powerful pies. But I mean, in terms of actually looking at which president did best for the markets, I mean, you've got two presidential terms to compare here. With Trump, we saw S&P 500 growth of 70%, and with Biden, it was 44%. So the markets, I don't think they're going to be too worried about another Trump presidency, because markets like deregulation. They like tax cuts. They're not so much worried about all the rhetoric. But of course, the other interesting aspect is Ukraine. Mm. And I noticed Trump was very quick to answer quite a difficult question on Ukraine. I mean, the CNN interview laid it out as it was. Putin's taken 20% of the territory. His conditions, really, can he keep that and ensure that Ukraine will never be part of NATO? Are those terms acceptable to you, Mr. Trump? And he said, well, no, they're not. But he does believe that he can force an outcome or achieve an outcome quite quickly.
I don't know if he can. I don't know if he can now, because how could the Russians trust the Americans anymore? Or Europe or NATO? Or there has to be a lot of repair work done there, you'd think. A lot of repair work.
Yes, I can see that point. I mean, I'm looking at it from the point of view of the trading desk and the markets telling me that this war is now contained. They're not overly worried about it. I mean, when it first happened in 2022, it was frightening because the markets dropped 7%, and we had clients worried about the geopolitical fallout and very worried about their portfolios. But you know what? Within a month after that war broke out, markets were higher than they were before. So there was an initial shock, and then there was an adjustment and a realization that, well, perhaps this war is going to be fairly contained. I mean, the big concern was obviously the gas supply in Europe. But with emergency measures, the EU was able to very quickly restore that supply with imports from the US and Norway within just 4 months. So, I mean, in my view, it's been a bit of a disaster for Mr. Putin. I mean, this is a country right next door. He went in to try and get Ukraine. 30 or so Ukrainian soldiers with night goggles identified where his units were coming in, sent in the drones, pushed him back. And 2 years later, he's only managed to acquire about 20% of the territory. And he's pushed two more potential NATO members there with Finland and Sweden. So it's been a bit of a disaster. But, I mean, so many lives have been lost. We really need an outcome here.
We could debate for another day whether that was actually a full-scale invasion, wanting to take over a whole country or just to annex off.
Well, the term was a special operation.
Yeah, it wasn't an invasion. And it was done with 80,000 troops, which is you're dreaming if you want to take over a country. Anyway, that's another thing for another day. All right, speaking of Europe, so the markets perceive this as contained and maybe a Trump outcome. And life goes on. I get it. Pity about all those people who are killed, though. The strange phenomena of the Bardella bump last month in Europe. What the hell is this? What is the Bardella bump?
Huh? Well, in early June, when the National Rally took significant power in the EU elections, the media has pejoratively been calling them the far right. I don't know what far right means anymore. I think if you mow your lawns with a two-stroke mower, you're probably far right. But anyway,
I've been called far right. Come on, I'm an old washed-out lefty, actually. you know.
Well, yes. I mean, what happened there is the market dropped because of this sort of far-right win, and, you know, we had clients who were quite worried about that. But then it very quickly restored when it realized, well, hang on, let's have a look at the policies of the National Rally, of Jordan Bardella. And I mean, there's simple things like wanting to cut VAT on energy, wanting to reduce the deficit to 3%. And then, of course, the markets quickly recovered. And we see this time and time again. I mean, markets hate uncertainty. And really, if you're an investor, that's your opportunity, Paul, to really buy these dips where the market's really behaving like a nerd on his first date. buy the dip, actually realize it's going to work out all right and make some money. And that was a great opportunity to get into some good European positions. And often it's the same with war. I mean, I take your comment that it is truly terrible, the lives that have been lost. But the market has no morality.
No,
money-focused whore looking for growth and income. It's absolutely ravenous as it keeps pushing its way forward. And there's this very interesting phenomenon called the war puzzle, that even when the world goes to the most disastrous wars, Second World War, for example, over that period, 39 to 45, the Dow actually rose 50%, 7% a year. Because, I mean, like this, you know, life is filled with problems and issues. But, I mean, if you look at the Cold War, that led to innovation. Because of the Cold War and Sputnik and competition from the Soviets, we now have the internet.
Yeah.
Because the Americans sort of looked at what was happening and they said, well, if there's a nuclear war, how can we communicate?
Yeah.
And that gave rise to the internet and this huge revolution, technological revolution we've had today, and this huge increase in wealth.
Can you imagine on the red phone Biden calling up Putin and trying to explain what's going on, given what we saw the other night? Like, and your in-laws, you know, what the hell?
Well, yeah, that would be a bit of an interesting phone call. I mean, I think the phone call Putin really needs to get is perhaps from President Xi, who says, I'm not going to help you anymore. You need to end this now and sort it out. Because yeah, it does seem that China has provided some degree of support to the Russians in this war.
So the markets regards Europe are okay then with this crazy shift to the far right once they looked at the policy detail?
Yeah, well, as I say, any sort of uncertainty does overturn the apple cart, and then there's time for cooler heads to prevail and see that there's value evident. But, of course, we've got the runoffs on Sunday, we'll see whether Jordan Bardella, the 28-year-old on TikTok who's out at the party circuit, will
become not a TikTok guy. That's
the next Prime Minister of France. And okay. I think there'll be another market reaction to that. I mean, there's a lot of horse trading going on at the moment to ensure the vote is not split between the three main parties and to keep him out because he's dangerous, he's far right. Yeah. But we'll see how that goes.
Doesn't Macron have a background in financial markets?
Yes, I believe he does. And perhaps that's why he's so centrist. He understands that financial markets more than anything crave stability. But when you're an investor, you do need the dips, you do need things to go dark so you can get in and find some value. But of course, you also need a degree of bravery to capture that.
Yeah, well, yeah, good luck finding that in a lot of places these days. But I'm sure it doesn't lack with you, Simon, up there in the middle of the night, tapping away on the trading sites or whatever and doing what you do for your customers.
Oh, when you see a market dropping quickly like it did in 22 when he invaded Ukraine, or even early June when the European elections changed, fear does affect you, and
yeah.
nobody's immune from that. I mean, the most fearful time in recent years was when the lockdowns began in March 2020, and we were absolutely scrambling. How can businesses trade when they're not even allowed to open? I mean, they're sort of draconian rules. We're actually going through portfolios line by line, and of course, it proved to be the best opportunity to buy great businesses at value, really, in the past decade.
Yeah, thank you, Jacinda and co. All right, let's look at this too before we're done. The basic laws of human stupidity. That actually got my attention first out of the list, but I thought we'd kind of end on that. And how to spot whether AI is being intelligent. First of all, what is, you know, when you're measuring off AI next to humans, what is intelligence in the end? Because it's binary for AI, isn't it? It's the zeros and ones. It's far more complicated for human beings.
Yeah, well, I've been thinking about this a lot because one of the best investment trends in front of us is AI. I mean, some analysts say it's going to grow global GDP by 7% over the next decade. So it's a big force every investor needs to look at. And that question you've just asked gets at the nub of it. What is intelligence? So when you're an investor, you try to be a mental athlete. You're trying to learn. You constantly realize how dumb you are, how little you know. You've got to stay curious. You've got to keep your mind open. And I come across this tiny little book called The Basic Laws of Human Stupidity. It's by an economics professor at Pavia University, Carlo Cipolla. Now, he defines intelligence when you add value, when you take an action that adds value to yourself and to others, that's intelligent. So, for instance, if I make myself $100 and I also make you $100, Paul, that's an intelligent action. Society's $200 better off. So you can kind of see those people in business prevail and do well. Then he also defines human stupidity. If I take an action that's got absolutely no benefit to myself and I lose $100, and it's got no benefit to anyone else and even causes them loss, you lose $100 as well. Society's lost $200. I've lost. You've lost. That's the definition of a stupid person.
Reminds me of the last 3 years.
Well, this is the whole point. In a private business, stupid people soon get found out and turfed out. In the public service and in government, well, they can be elected by constituencies of other stupid people every few years.
That definition that you just referenced from the book on what is intelligence, it's interesting because that's kind of, you could look at it in a religious way as well, because you're lifting yourself up, so you're loving yourself or whatever, and you're lifting someone else up, is the example you gave. Okay, as a transactional thing, everyone wins, that's great, but actually, that's a very positive, meaningful thing to do in of itself.
I agree with you. I mean, he's looking at it from an economic point of view, and you certainly see this in the investment world. I mean, not financial advice here at all, but when people's portfolios start dropping in those cases that we've mentioned, it's probably a stupid thing to do to sell out because you disadvantage yourself usually. And you'd start disadvantaging everybody else because you're part of the whole force that continues to pull the market down. So from an economic perspective, that's how stupidity works.
I guess it's really clear what is right and what is wrong is probably what I'm talking about, if you want to take it down to almost indivisible, you know.
Yeah, yep.
You mentioned that GDP bump, huge bump from AI potentially. Yeah, but does that involve everyone? Because I see this replacing a lot of jobs, actually.
Yeah, there will be jobs that are replaced. I think you've got to look at it positively as an investor and say, well, how can you invest to grow from this, to profit from this? I'll give you quite a good example. I'm currently booking a trip to Italy, and because I've got a couple of kids, hotel rooms aren't going to cut it, so I'm using Airbnb.
Right.
Now, last year, Airbnb acquired a business called Game Planner AI. It's a $200 million AI business that nobody really knows what it does because it's all under wraps. But management of Airbnb has said that AI is going to radically change our business by revolutionizing our travel matches.
Okay.
And I was trying to book an apartment in Venice, end of the year, Christmas time, quite difficult, and I saw that in action. My wife found a nice apartment, could accommodate us all. I said, oh, let's see if anything else turns up. She checked back a couple of nights later and the price had jumped. So it seemed to be that the model knew that we were looking and very interested in that apartment.
Okay.
And, I got pretty annoyed. I thought, well, this AI is not very intelligent at all. It's actually a bandit. It's just trying to make money for itself.
And highway robber.
Yeah, it's a highway robbery. So I said, oh, maybe we need to look at some of these other booking sites and see what else is out there. And I think speculatively, the AI model sensed that, and it then threw up another great apartment at a much lower cost.
Oh, wow. Okay. And,
I felt like the app had been reading my mind. And obviously we grabbed that. And I thought, well, there is a potential use of artificial intelligence to add benefit to the business and the customer rather than just artificial stupidity.
Nice to have a real world example.
Yeah, I think we'll see more and more of those.
Is that going to be like the rock star area of investment going forward then? Is that the number one potentially?
Oh, we're always looking for the new star on the stage that can drive more growth, no question. And when you look at, I mean, we've had the internet, we've had social media, we've had the information age. Well, really, these AI chips coming from the likes of NVIDIA could drive a huge amount of processing power and just work on so many of the information and problems we face each day. What I do like about it is you're using technology and the market to solve a business problem rather than actual government interference.
Yeah, good point.
And we've actually had that this week. I mean, I was surprised that they come out and announced this Fair News digital
bundle. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that just seems to be interference in a business model that, left to its own devices, could actually find far better ways to drive their business forward rather than trying to have the big tech companies prop them up. I mean, it's like sort of going to the All Blacks and saying, well, when you need to sit down and negotiate with some of these losing teams and pay them so they can get a few wins on the board. I mean, yeah. Seriously.
And the thing is, it's going to fail because it's all or nothing. If I was one of those companies, I'd say, well, who do you think you are? Sorry, we don't need to carry your news. No, it's not going to bother us. Done. It happens in Canada. I think it almost happened in Australia. Probably happened here. So you're potentially three steps back instead of two if you're on the receiving end.
Well, I feel the same way, Paul. I mean, at Wealth Morning, sometimes our investment news gets picked up by Google and it's the top news of the day. And then that generates more traffic. People click on ads and sometimes the wholesale invest money with us down the track if they like what we're saying. But of course, if Google suddenly said, well, oh, we might have to pay these guys, it kind of skews the whole model. Not, well, we might have to, we're actually forced to pay them. They may instead just pick up international news rather than local news. So I am concerned as to how it will work.
Yeah, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, don't know about that.
Well, that's it. I mean, we mentioned Jordan Bardella there in Europe, and I think one thing he has said is, I'd like to privatise state media because it's leftist propaganda that people are tired of paying for. And I think there's something in that. You've got to have a media that's genuinely trusted. And I think we've had a long conversation here today on RCR, and you guys do long conversations where people get the information in such a way they feel they can trust it.
Here's a last quick-fire question, not on any list, but so would a privately owned and operated rail ferry service, because it still makes sense to do the rail thing, maybe not even rail, roll-on, roll-off rail, Is that the way to go, do you think, given the state of things?
Well, given they haven't worked too well under the government, I think there's a strong argument for that. Because, of course, when you privatise ferries, I mean, you can also regulate the industry if there's only one operator. And, I mean, I recall the ferries from Jersey to France, which I used to take all the time. They operated very, very well in the very choppy English Channel. And it was a private company. And while they were the only private company, there was inevitably pressure from consumers and the local government that kept them honest. Of course, the ideal thing is you have more, you know, sort of the UK Channel crossing scenario where you have multiple operators all competing to get you the very best deal across the Cook Strait.
Well, we've got two on Cook Strait. We've got Bluebridge. They don't seem to have any problems. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's the ideal. You've got population density that want to cross the Strait, and you've got competitive business models there offering customers the best solutions to get across.
Yep. All right, good to catch up again, Simon Angelo. If people want to know more about Wealth Morning, go to wealthmorning.com. Great to have you back. Really interesting stuff to talk about. And look forward to catching up again next time on Money Talks.
Wonderful to speak to you, Paul. Go well.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.